Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast. This is the space and the place for leadership learning. I'm Joanne Smichael. I'm a speaker, an educator, a consultant, and a forever student of the world. Enjoy this episode. By now, I hope you've got the book, The Champion's Creed by Ben Utecht. And by now, I hope you've read it because we talked about it on an earlier episode and it's good. It's really good. And I also hope you've started applying the principles to enhance and enrich culture in your organization. Ben is back this morning and welcome.
Thanks, Joanne. Happy to be with you.
Last time you were here, we talked about football, we talked about concussions, we talked about singing with Sandy Patty, we talked about your wonderful lessons from Tony Dungy and the foundation that your father laid for success in life. Today, I want to talk about transforming organizations. You are the Chief Culture Officer, that's a mouthful, at True North Private Equity. Talk about what culture is and what it is not. You talked a lot the last time about what it is, but what isn't it?
Man, that's a great question. I think, just going back to what we talked about in our last session, you know, culture is the foundation of beliefs, assumptions, and artifacts that come out of every community. Right. So even making that more simple, when I was working with Dr. Daniel Zismer, who's a professor emeritus at the University of Minnesota, we wanted to even simplify that because of the importance of defining culture in a memorable way. Right. Because the ultimate goal, Joanne, is we'd like to walk around our organizations and ask every single team member, you know, to define what culture is in the organization and have them be able to do it in alignment, right? How powerful to have an organization that fully understands, you know, what the foundational belief perspective is on answering what is culture. So we took Dr. Edgar Schein's definition and simplified it to being culture is what we believe, why we believe it, and how we believe it should be practiced in the workplace. And that's memorable, right? The rule of threes. And so we wanted to stay in that lane. So that's, you know, my perspective on what culture is. What culture is not is just a series of value principles splashed onto a website with marketing language behind it. And we need value principles to represent what our beliefs are. But oftentimes they can be misleading because they're aspirational in nature and they're not performance-based in nature. And there's a chapter in the book about the difference between performance culture and aspirational culture. And I think as a chief culture officer, I've really learned that there's a hybrid model within that's really important. The combination of deeply defining and providing clarity around the performance culture, which is these are the beliefs and behaviors you will experience the most out of your leadership on a daily basis, versus what are the beliefs and values that we aspire to always, you know, desire to reach, but it's not applicable to what you're going to experience on a daily basis. Right, because when value principles are marketed or promoted through an aspirational lens, they can be misleading. Mm-hmm. I do believe that some of our attrition rates are caused exactly by that. Is you will draw people in through marketing specific value principles, but your leadership behavior is not reflecting those value principles.
Yep.
And then you get the workplace hypocrisy and people 3 months into the job, they're sitting here going, wow, this is not the culture that I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, they become disillusioned.
They become disillusioned.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so I'm always encouraging organizations to really redefine those value principles through a performance lens. You want to be as crystal clear as possible that when it comes to performance in the organization, these are exactly the beliefs and behaviors you're going to experience the most. And that was true in Indianapolis when I was playing for the Colts. I mean, Tony Dungy and his quiet strength and servant leadership, I mean, that all sounds inspirational itself. But when you walked into the locker room, in big blue letters on the white wall was the quote from Tony Dungy that said, "No excuses, no explanations. The only way we win is through execution." Right? So there was a combination of here's what we aspire towards being at our best, but the performance expectation, the performance culture was very clear. When you step into this locker room, we demand excellence and perfection, and we're gonna work as hard as we can to get there. And it's gonna be intense, and it's gonna be hard, and it's gonna be stressful at times, but it's also gonna be full of celebration and joy and camaraderie and collaboration, all those things together.
And that is what we seek in the workplace. A lot of my work is around retention. How do we create strategies for retention? What do we do to keep people here? And you and I, this is how we connected, was the conversation about what are you doing to create a healthy environment that people can live in, that they want to be in, because it's that environment, that culture that keeps people engaged and keeps people committed, deeply committed. They're not just committed because they get a good paycheck or good bonuses. They're committed because their heart is invested.
Yes. Yeah, that's so powerful. And I think so many leaders I think feel overwhelmed by that, right? And because they haven't spent enough time in understanding it, number one, and then understanding how to develop it and practice it. They don't have careers, like your exceptional career where you've spent so much time deeply understanding the human condition and how to impact it. And so if we can, be a voice into that, remember, looking at the culture strategy as a pebble strategy where you don't have to change your culture from 0 to 100, and
And
it
you can't. It
can't
doesn't work like that.
because it's people. So let go of that expectation. And understand that it's about moving the dial 2, 3, 4% every year. How can we make ripple effects that over time are going to lead us towards our ultimate culture goal? And you're right, it's going to take time.
It does. One of the things that I've observed is for some leaders, it's hard to wrap their head around this because they've never experienced it themselves. So they get to these executive roles, and we start talking about creating a different culture, making it operational, holding people accountable to it, making it performance oriented, and making it a healthy culture. And sometimes, I don't know if this happens for you, but sometimes I get this look like, where did they get this woman? Does she have, what planet did they get her from? Because they never experienced that. Do you see that?
I do see it, but what I think is really interesting is when you get these senior leaders into a room and you start getting past the corporate veil, start asking questions like, "Hey, how do you handle confrontation at home with your wife and your kids? How do you work with one of your children who's facing an academic challenge or a relational challenge?" And all of a sudden they turn into a totally different leader, and they're having more meaningful conversations, with their inner circle and the people that they care about the most. And it's a really cool process of connecting dots and helping them understand, well, you're actually going beyond what you typically do in the workplace, and so it tells me that you're capable, you're able to do that. You have to bring some of these strategies and practices that you are already doing in other areas of your life outside of work, and bring them into the conversation. Because if you're at the board table and you're able to carve out, some time in the agenda to have these types of conversations, I promise you, what will happen around that board table is you'll begin to create objective opportunities to implement, practices towards human. But it's just it's they're just not used to flexing that muscle
Right.
and
Right.
understand.
Nobody's asked them to.
Nobody's asked them to. And then most importantly, make the argument that when you the reason why the time is necessary is because it has a financial value to it. But you've got to believe that, right? And if you put the time in and you start to implement new strategies to create more purpose and value in your employees, that not only will their performance improve, which will impact the bottom line, but now you're going to retain and you're going to get stronger engagement. And
Which
that's
saves
if
you money because recruiting over and over again is very expensive.
oh, it's
Very
yeah,
expensive.
I think the average, according to Gallup, is about $12,500 an employee. And from 2017 to I think 2022 or 23, it was like an estimated $225 billion is what attrition cost the marketplace over those 5 years.
That is staggering.
That's I mean that's what I'm
That
saying.
is
So,
staggering.
you know, yeah, it's a big deal, and it can greatly impact, you know, the bottom line of an organization.
Now you just talked about getting leaders into a room and having a different kind of conversation with them. Tell me more of what you're doing as Chief Culture Officer, and will you tell us a little bit about True North Private Equity? What is the focus of the company? What do you do?
So the focus of True North is to empower small to mid-cap organizations and to come alongside of businesses that have a 2, 3, 4x potential, but just haven't had the right support systems. And so the founders of True North really dedicated towards acquiring, you know, small to mid-sized companies and then pouring in a stronger degree of, you know, the right type of management so that we can enhance those businesses. It's a very diverse portfolio across over a handful of industries from transportation, manufacturing, packaging. You know, we have professional sports. True North owns the Sioux Falls Canaries minor league baseball team. We have financial services. We have an M&A organization and a business brokerage company. So I got to experience a lot of diversity when it came to the industries, which was, you know, it posed some challenges because how do you scale culture across, you know, such different, you know, platforms? And so what I wanted to do from the beginning is I wanted to establish a significant objective belief system that could cover all 28 companies. And so, coming off of the book, The Champions Creed, I developed an organizational product called the Culture Creed. And the Culture Creed became an inspirational, educational, and operational document, basically a culture onboarding, development, and training manual. So that was the first step, was to take True North's eight core values, you know, that were identified on a website, just like we had talked about, and actually turn it into what is now a 32-page culture training manual that can be used in every organization, from pre-screening to the interview to the onboarding, and then ultimately to the development of people back towards the core beliefs, right? Because now each of those value principles, on about 2 to 3 pages per value principle, goes deeply into the belief system of those values, right? So one of our values was integrity. So we spend about 3 pages talking about what we believe about integrity. Why we believe the psychology of integrity. Why does integrity matter in the workplace? And then, most importantly, how do we practice integrity at True North? And how can we develop integrity in ourselves and the people around us? And we're providing very simple, practical, and tactical examples of what it looks like to be a person of integrity in the workplace. And so that was my way of creating something that could ultimately move the dial, you know, of culture, just, you know, a little bit from the very beginning, right? Because we want to go ahead.
No. You go ahead, and then I'll ask you.
Yeah, well, I just, I was listening to the CHRO of Netflix, and she became really famous in the organizational culture space because someone had leaked the Netflix culture deck out into the marketplace. And so she started getting a lot of questions about this document that very clearly defined their culture. And what she said was, the minute someone applies and they get selected for an interview, the first thing that they receive is our culture deck. And they're asked to study this deck because it's going to be a part of the interview process. Then she went a step further and she said, the first question we ask them in the interview is, did you study the culture deck? And if the answer is no, we say goodbye. And she said, and it happens more than you think. And we actually don't fulfill the interview. That's it. You're and so there was this level of importance on making sure that from the very beginning of the process, you're introducing the applicants into the culture. And honestly, that's actually a very inclusive way to present culture because you're wanting to empower the applicant to make the best culture decision for their lives. And if you're doing a good job of providing clarity around the performance culture and the aspirational culture, you're empowering them to determine whether this organizational culture is the right fit for me.
Right.
It,
And I like that because you need to come in eyes wide open. Eyes wide open. Yeah.
100%. So anyway, that's where the objective strategy for me was, how do we take words on a website and actually turn it into a manifesto or a training manual that provides 100 times the depth and clarity around the culture of the organization? And then on the back end of that, Joanne, when it comes to the development of people, when I would meet with the portfolio managers of the different companies each month, I would part of that coaching session is always leading back towards the value principles and how are we behaving in a manner that's reflective of these? And is there a value principle as a leader that you struggle with the most? And let's
Because sometimes we do.
Yes,
Let's
100%.
be real.
That's okay. And that's okay. The fact that we're even talking about it, and the fact that every month, I can hold you accountable, and I can help you think about different ways in which you can practice and behave that's more reflective of the. Now we've got a system of development that's always trying to help the leader be more reflective of the core beliefs and values of the company.
So that was going to be my next. This is what I'm curious about. You have, what did you say, 40 some companies in all these different.
There's 28. There's 28 companies at True North.
Okay, so you're going to get to 40 some because I just spoke it
Yeah,
into
Dwayne
existence.
the founder. Yeah, he's not stopping anytime soon. Yeah.
So 28 companies. Do you require each company to take this 32-page document and begin using it in their organizations, or do the portfolio managers just suggest it? Tell me how that works.
Well, so then. That opened up the conversation to what I've learned about subcultures, which, I think we even talked about that. You're going to have, even every department within an organization is going to have its own subculture. Sales is going to be different than IT, different than administration, different than human resources. And so, what ended up happening is the True North Creed became kind of the high level corporate umbrella that kind of oversaw, the portfolio of companies. And then in sitting down with the senior leadership of the individual companies, began understanding how different, their businesses are, unique to one another. And that opened up the door to develop their own culture creed, as
And
long
you guide them in that.
and I guide them in that. And so We've just gotten started in that, and so we've got, for example, for our Sunbelt Business Advisor company and our True North mergers and acquisitions, we've developed our own organizational creed for that company. So, they have four core value principles that we developed into a deep and meaningful culture training manual. And so, but those value principles fit under the umbrella of the overarching True North culture creed, right? So they're in alignment with the foundational beliefs and values of the private equity company, but they are also personalized towards that specific organization. And that gave them more ownership of their own core belief system. And that belief system, what's great about that is now anytime they hire a new group of business advisors or business brokers, I go in and do a culture training at the beginning of that hiring process. So part of our onboarding is a half-day session where we deeply go through the organizational creed and really defining the four value principles and what we believe, why, and how we believe they should be practiced, and then having meaningful conversations around that, and then opening the door for opportunity of executive coaching these advisors as they continue their journey in the company.
So that's a wonderful strategy. What other strategies do you use to get people in the C-suite to understand what culture is, their responsibility in creating and sustaining it? What else do you do beyond training and coaching?
So I write about this in the book as well, the importance of of data, because there's just objective truths that come out of understanding the data describing, our own behaviors. And so I brought in a behavioral assessment platform that I really enjoy, that I've been a part of in the past, as a partner. And I wanted to focus on behavior because of its connection to belief, that what we believe has an impact on how we behave. And so if we can understand how a person is going to behave most of the time in the workplace, we can directly connect that to what their foundational belief system is. And that's been really beneficial, especially when we do individual coaching, because to get psychological data behind, why a person behaves the way that they do has really opened the door to some deep and meaningful questions. And actually it's provided answers to these individuals, and helped them realize something about themselves that they didn't really know before that has an impact on the environment that they create as leaders. And so that's also what has led us into some of the benchmarking, Joanne. Really cool. So I can take the foundational beliefs of the leadership, and we can look at what the data says about how they behave as a leadership team, and we can do a comparison report across all of the leaders. And what will come out of the comparison report are the behaviors that are in alignment across all senior leadership. And what that means is we can see actually what are the behaviors that the employees are experiencing from you the most. And oftentimes, a strong percentage of those behaviors are not what's in the core value principles, right? And that, so the data, the benchmarking really gives us a reflection of the performance culture of the leadership of the organization. And once we understand what those attributes are and where they fall on the adjective checklist, then we can create a benchmark that says, okay, this is our performance culture. And then when we hire people, we can see where the natural alignment or the adaptive alignment is on whether or not they are aligned with the performance culture. So it's a really strong tool. And it doesn't, I mean, that's for me, but I do encourage organizations to do some due diligence and find a platform that they really believe helps them hire better, develop better, because I think that data is really valuable.
So resistance. I know that I've encountered resistance even with showing them the data. How do you handle it? I have to tell you, there's a funny story where gathered all this data, did these focus groups, did these interviews, did a survey, and presented it to the senior leadership team. And they said, "That's not true, Joanne. We don't know who you were talking to, but that's not true. That is not how we treat people. That is not why we can't keep people here. That's not true." And I was like, okay, now I'm stuck. I was like, okay, I'm stuck. I've never had this happen before. What do I do?
Yeah, it is. There's a there you are walking on a tightrope. And I've really tried to use storytelling in those types of situations to maybe peel the layers of the onion back, because sometimes the psychology, the way it presents itself, does not connect to the leader. For example, on the adjective checklist assessment, one of the attributes is mentorship. And so the definition of a low mentor is actually pretty coarse. It's not a fun summary to read, because it describes the leader as being fickle and thinking more about themselves than others. And so I'm always, whenever I have to coach someone that scores low on mentoring, I'm always like, oh, I don't want to explain this to them. And many times the reaction is, that's not true. I want to develop people. I want to care about people. And so I had to start, understanding their story and connecting the dots. For example, low mentorship is also reflective of somebody that is in a place in their business career where they have no choice but to focus specifically on themselves. And the way that the summary presents itself is as selfishness. But sometimes the selfishness is really focus that doesn't have time for other people. So it doesn't mean that you don't care about the development of other people. It just means that you're in a period of in your career where you don't have the time to give to other people. All of your time is focused on very specific goals that you have to meet that are a part of your KPIs, and that's it. And so then asking them, where are you in your career? And most of the time they say, well, that actually is really true. I've got a lot on my plate, and I really want that next promotion. And so every day is literally just focusing on what I have to accomplish. And I said, okay, that's interesting then, isn't it? Because the mentorship attribute is about focusing first on other people, but you've just admitted that you don't have time to focus on other people right now. You're just only focusing on yourself. And they go, okay, wow, yeah.
It's a
Okay.
revelation.
It's like that, yeah, that makes sense. So, it's not always going to be, perfect, and every assessment has subjectivity. So it's not always, not everything that's in an assessment is going to apply.
Right, of
Yeah.
course.
But if you can think kind of around how the data, if you can find a way to make a connection through a different story in their life, that's not always only focused on their workplace behaviors. Sometimes that can make the connection that ultimately, provides some acceptance.
And I like the way that you ask the follow-on questions to get them to unearth it for themselves. I like that
Yes,
strategy.
that's important.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
like that strategy. I am interested in the focus you put on practice in your book. And one of the things that you talk about is the need to practice these skills, practice understanding culture, those things for leaders. How do leaders actually practice in the way that you did as an athlete? How do they practice creating and sustaining culture?
Well, let's first start with, some data that really articulates the difference between professional sports and the business world when it comes to practice. So, coming out of the NFL data, we know that for every 280 hours of practice, an NFL player only plays 1 hour of performance.
Wow.
So just think about that, right? And it gets even smaller. Every NFL game has 65 to 75 plays. Every play on average lasts 5 to 6 seconds. So if you're a starter and you never leave the field, you're playing between 9 and 11 minutes of football on an NFL 3 hour production. And that's when we practice 16 hours a week to play for 9 to 11 minutes on Sunday, right? So, but that's the reason why we love watching the game. You literally are watching the best athletes in the world, and it's because they've spent a career practicing. But in the business world, it's 99% performance, right? And so Gallup says that for every 30 to 40 hours that an employee works, they might get an hour of human development practice.
Wow, that's distressing. That's
Because
distressing.
it's just distressing, and at the same time, because of the transactional nature of business, it's not it I understand it. Just how do you take that 1 hour and how do you make a shift, right? And it doesn't mean, again, not 0 to 100. You don't have to go from 1 hour to 15 hours, but imagine if it was, even 2 hours. Imagine if they got 2 hours of human development a week, and how just practicing towards the core beliefs and values of the organization on a consistent basis would have an impact, on.
And they can all, I believe that leaders have to take responsibility for their own development. Yes, the organization is responsible for setting up an environment where, learning and all of that is woven in. But things like the Champions Creed, you can read the Champions Creed. You do not have to wait for your organization to give it to you. I love a lot of the Kuz's and Posner books. You can take responsibility for reading. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you have some interest in leadership learning, but I think there are lots of vehicles that are available to us now and so many different platforms that a leader can own responsibility for practice and
Oh,
learning.
interesting. Yeah, culture is the leader's choice. So I.
It is a choice. It is. So, top 3 points you want leaders to remember about culture.
Number one, you will always have a culture by design or default. So why not design it? Right? Number two, belief is the foundation of every culture in the world. So deeply understand what it is you believe. Why it is you believe, and how do you believe that your value principles should be practiced in the workplace? And number three is to understand the importance of practice. Right? There's an ancient story told about two men that says, "He who listens to my words and puts them into practice is like a man who builds his house on the rock. The winds blow, the rains fall, the house stands. He who listens to my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who builds his house on sand. The winds blow, the rains fall, and the house crumbles." So, what's the difference between the two? They both listened, which means they both learned, but only one chose to practice. And so, understanding, you're always going to have a culture, so design it. The second being your ability to understand that you create a system out of that, and the third is to be able to practice that.
I like that.
And that gives you a structure, that gives you a blueprint, and allows you to, you know, to start making incremental changes that will have a positive impact on your culture over time.
I like that. This has been a great conversation, but we're out of time. Pretty soon, Dan is going to kick us out of the studio. But I want to continue to explore the points that you raise in the Champions Creed about transforming. About transforming culture. So I'd like to continue that conversation soon, very soon.
That's good.
All right. Thank you. One more time. It's benutechspeaks.com for people who want more information.
Yes.
And the book, The Champions Creed, it's available on Amazon, in the bookstores as well.
Yes, Barnes and Noble, in the bookstores as well. Had a great opening week. Made it to number two on the hot sellers list behind Bill Belichick, the former head coach of the Patriots.
I love it.
I told my wife, I said, you know what? We beat them in the AFC championship, so he can have it there. No, I just think, you know, Joanne, I mean, obviously you're an expert in this organizational culture world, and everybody's talking about it. It's, you know, but there's not a lot of people that, you know, that companies can lean on, like yourself, you know, that know how to actually do something about it. And so I just think that it's the right time to start having these conversations around culture.
I think it's critical right now because of lots of reasons from the external environment that are impacting the internal environment in organizations.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So we're going to talk again very soon.
Okay.
And thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Be sure that you subscribe and share. You can get more leadership learning from my YouTube channel and by following me on Instagram. Reach out when you're looking for a speaker to energize your next event. Reach out when you need curated leadership learning for your organization. Reach out when you're ready for consulting that will help your organization fulfill its potential. I'm Joanne Smichael, and thank you for tuning in.